There's like thousands of these shit coins out there, and they're no different than the meme stock craze. It's not. This is just sort of like it's a weird social thing that's going on. But Bitcoin is, in my opinion, you know, above that. You know what I mean? People try to conflate the two. It's like no. There's these meme coins that anybody in their mom's basement can spin up and create and kind of pump up there. But then there's the original Bitcoin that now has, you know, 12 plus institutional backed ETFs. There's, you know, entire mining operations that are publicly traded that are, you know, doing millions. And so this is like, it's reached that point where this isn't just some fad. It's actually becoming an actual asset class. All right, let's get started. Welcome to the Angel Research Podcast. My name is Jason Freert. I'm your host, and I'm here with Alex Bolden. What's up, Alex?
What's up?
What are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about some crypto.
We can talk about crypto.
We were just talking about the Binance guy. I guess I just looked it up. He's out on bail. But
how much was it? 17 million, so you said?
No, 175 million.
175.
Was his bail. And then I guess his trial got postponed to April. But I guess that's on the backdrop of the Sam Bankman-Fried is facing 25 years. Do you think that was fair?
25. I mean, honestly, I feel like it's a little harsh.
You think so?
Yeah.
For just,
I mean, 25 to life
losing is like, all those people's monies.
Yeah, but 25 to life is what you get for murdering somebody. Like, I feel like, I don't know. I'm kind of,
he didn't murder anybody that we know of.
He murdered people's bank accounts.
He just murdered their life savings.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my, like, the white collar stuff is kind of like,
you put that in a different realm than
it feels
violence.
Different. It feels different. It's a nonviolent crime, technically. He should be like publicly shamed and never allowed to run a business ever again.
Yeah.
But he's not going to do 25 years anyway. He'll get out.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows what other dirt he's got on people that he can wiggle his way out. But I mean, it's kind of funny. So that moment when that hole went down was basically the last cycle bottom of Bitcoin and crypto, right when he was arrested and all this stuff, went up. It was, you know, Bitcoin was around 15,000, 16,000.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're at a lot higher here. You actually hold Bitcoin in the insider stakeout portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your plan for that? Long-term hold? You're going to trade it through the cycle or?
I really want to see what happens mid-month with the halving.
Mm-hmm.
Really just holding it through that period and seeing what happens.
Right.
But it was kind of like trending down for a while. And I figured it was like the only thing that was really seemed like a good buy at the time. Like I was struggling to find any stocks that were like, you know, I mean, this was what, 4 or 6 months ago or something, and everything was kind of floundering. So a lot of people were buying into Bitcoin, you know, Michael Saylor, a lot of insiders were still buying it. So I figured, you know.
And this was pre Bitcoin ETF when you recommended it.
Yeah. I don't think they'd been approved yet. So, I mean, that's been a good play. You could totally sell it and walk away with like, I don't know, I think we're up like 40% or something. But I mean, with Bitcoin, I think it's a long-term hold, really. I think it's something that you're going to hold into your retirement. Like, I remember 2 or 3 years ago, I was writing about the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust and how you should be putting that into your retirement account and not touching it.
Right.
Because, and it did all those things kind of crashed for a minute, but now that they approved all the rest of the ETFs, it's just they've been doing really well. So
yeah, I mean, that, you know, people talk about what the actual technicals of the Bitcoin ETF, you know, it's out there, and oh, like more people are going to buy it, and then they have to buy the actual Bitcoin to put in the ETF. But what it really does is just adds more legitimacy to the industry, right? You have these institutional, you know, banks that they're not going to just go into. We were talking before about, you know, the quote unquote shit coins like Shiba Inu. You know, what was the one you were talking about? Zen coin? There's thousands of these shit coins out there, and they're no different than the meme stock craze. It's not, this is just sort of like, it's a weird social thing that's going on. But Bitcoin is, in my opinion, you know, above that. You know what I mean? People try to conflate the two. It's like, no. There's these shit meme coins that anybody in their mom's basement can spin up and create and kind of pump up there. But then there's the original Bitcoin that now has, you know, 12 plus institutional backed ETFs. There's, you know, entire mining operations that are publicly traded that are, you know, doing millions. And so this is like, it's reached that point where this isn't just some fad. It's actually becoming an actual asset class.
Yeah, for sure. I really think it would be cool if we could get an infrastructure in place where we're actually using it. I mean, you can kind of do that now. You can kind of buy and sell things. I mean, there's ATMs where you can kind of take Bitcoin out and buy Bitcoin. But, I mean, if you've ever used it, the network gets congested really easily, and it's very slow to, like, send coins or send.
It's not like a Venmo. Like, I could Venmo, quote-unquote, Venmo you money right now, and, you know, I could do it, and then it will pop up on your phone
right
there. That, it's not user-friendly with Bitcoin like that. Yeah. Although, I think when people say currency, they're thinking of, like the dollar. And it's like, nah, like if you compare it to something like gold, then it's fast as hell, right?
Right.
Like how long does it take me to get gold to you on the other side of the planet? Mm-hmm. Like I got to ship it and it's super expensive. You got to insure it and it's going to take, you know, whatever. But,
that's a good point.
If I'm sending you Bitcoin, you know, oh, it might take a couple of hours or whatever, and the fees are, you know, $3 or less.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
Right. So compared to that, you know, but compared to, you know, a dollar or anything like that, that has these, like, rails built out there. You know, is it something you're going to be buying a Starbucks coffee with, you know, in the near future? I doubt it, especially because it's just so volatile. Like, you know, it's not a stable. I mean, even gold, you wouldn't do that. Like, gold's at a record high now. You know what I mean? But, you know, in a couple of months, it could be down, you know, 20% or whatever. So, at least your currency that you're operating in doesn't tend to fluctuate often.
Yeah. I guess in theory, the volatility of Bitcoin should be decreasing with the ETFs and institutional buying. So hopefully that's what we're going to see moving forward. So we've kind of reached a bottom, so to speak.
Right.
Where it's not going to, you know, because last year, I mean, it was trading around the 40s and then it dropped all the way down to like 15. It's like, okay, well, that's a terrible, like that's awful.
Yeah.
Like I would never want to invest in that. But now hopefully we're seeing a time where that price is kind of baked in and it's not gonna
each time it tends to, you know, the cycle lows, like it used to be like, oh, it would drop like 90% and then it's gonna run up like 1,000% and then it's gonna drop another 80%. It seems to be now, like, even, you know, this past week I think it was down like 5 or 6% in like 24 hours or 48 hours. And I'm like, oh, it's this crypto. And it's like, well, like, you know, that's not that big of a deal in that. That's not 50%. Whereas there was some huge wild swings. Now it can sort of get that momentum going and really lose a lot in a short amount of time, unlike you would say like gold or like your traditional commodities. But I mean, even oil has, you know, gone, you know, 10, 15 years ago was at $150. And then at one point during COVID, it was trading negative. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you look at it in the realm of a commodity, it doesn't seem it's not that big of a deal to have these huge wild swings over a period of time.
No. And I just think it's important to have some of your portfolio in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I mean, been saying it for years too. Like, you just got to. There's, you know, just put as much in as you're willing to lose, basically. And you're probably going to make money when it goes up.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have enough of a history now to know that it should be at least a small portion of your investment portfolio.
Yeah.
You know, if not just a hedge against, you know, some massive, you know, pile into it. And just, I mean, you talk about the FOMO, right? Don't you want to at least have a little bit? So you're like, oh, yeah, if Bitcoin does go to $1 million, don't you want to at least want to have one of them? Just one. Just one. You'd be like, yeah, I just want one. So switching gears, I think it was your Art Wealth Daily article today, which you had talked about last week, is weed, our favorite topic.
Yeah.
So what's the big news in the weed world?
So April 1st, hopefully this isn't an April Fool's joke, Germany legalized weed recreationally.
Okay.
So that makes it the largest EU country to have done this.
I'm guessing, you know, like the Netherlands already had, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the Netherlands kind of, and I'm not exactly sure what they did.
Or was it just Amsterdam that was like the place?
I thought it was, Amsterdam had all the coffee shops, but I don't know if, I think the Netherlands was overall on board. But I know that they also put some laws into place where they were like limiting the amount that you could buy as like a tourist and stuff like that.
Right.
Because people were coming in just to do that. Which now, you know, if you're from the US, you don't have to obviously go over there. But the good thing about Amsterdam was always that they had like the original strains, the original seeds from a lot of these strains. So everything over there was like pure and stronger. And
right. It was the good shit.
Yeah. It was the good, good. But the fact that Germany did this, they kind of did it in a weird way. They've already, you know, the police have always been turning, not always, but recently turning a blind eye to people using weed, even though you can be, prosecuted for it. So now according to French newspaper Le Monde, on July 1st, you can legally obtain weed through what they're calling cannabis clubs. And it says that they're going to be regulated associations, and there will be 500 members each, which doesn't seem like a lot.
Like 500 of these clubs, I guess, or I guess it's like a liquor license, I guess. You get this club license. Yeah. Okay.
And you'll be able to distribute 50 grams of cannabis.
I'm sure that won't be a corrupt process.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like
giving them access.
It's obviously people are not going to follow those rules, but it's just mind-blowing to me that we have to like let the government be like, oh yeah, now it's legal. It's like, this is a, well, in the US, like, this is a free country. It's literally a plant. This mm-hmm. has always been legal.
Right.
Like, that's just the libertarian in me. Like, no, you don't have any authority over that.
Yeah.
So doing this, like, an unconstitutional law is unconstitutional, yeah. right? So,
I mean, ultimately, I think in the U.S., that's what's going to be the thing that has the floodgates is just like, they're like, okay, like, we want the tax revenue. We want to control this. We have, you know what I mean? Just like, you know, the pharmaceutical companies need to be under the control of the FDA or whatever. And they, you know, there's all sorts of regulations. There's a whole apparatus that's going to come in to play for this. So you think this is a big deal. It's not just one country. It's a pretty big country. I mean, Germany's not like Zimbabwe or yeah. whatever. Like, they're a pretty big player. So is the idea that most of the EU may follow suit?
Yeah, that's what I think. And I think it's just going to kind of have a ripple effect in the US too, where it's going to become federally legal. I think that's an inevitability.
Mm-hmm. Is that going to be Biden's final act?
I don't
or
know, man.
Whether it's... he's going to do it like right, like elect. That's going to yeah. be his October surprise. He's just yeah. like, all right, everybody. Or he'll say, look, just elect me. And then day one, re-elect me.
Right.
Day one, we're all going to just smoke some doobies. Mm. Do people say doobies anymore? I don't think they do.
I like saying doobie.
Yeah, that's cool. Doobies are cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to do it. I don't think that's on his card.
Well, and it sounds like they can basically do it. They don't need Congress, right? The FDA can basically deschedule it
mm-hmm.
or move the schedule to yeah. a different one, and then it just basically de facto makes it legal.
Yeah, and that was happening. I don't know what happened with that. It always just seems to be like, oh, we're talking about it, and then
yeah,
they just stopped talking about
it. They moved on to aliens or something else, Ukraine.
I mean, there's a lot going on. And this is why I'm saying that, like, when you have so much going on in the world and, like, stuff that you could be doing, it's like legalizing weed, having that be a priority is kind of just dumb because it should already be legal. So just...
Right.
Just write it off. Be like, okay, yeah, that's done.
Yeah,
like,
let's move on to some other stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So we talked about this before. Do you have any cannabis plays in the in your portfolio? Is this something you're sort of just keeping an eye on in terms of the trend, overall trend coming to the US? I know it seems like the 2017 was the cannabis craze. You know what I mean? We had a cannabis newsletter that was investing in, and some of the biggest gains we've had have been in that. Is this just more of like a maturation of the potential thing? Are the big players going to come in? Like, where are we thinking in terms of, you know, investment type stocks?
I think that, like, right now, if you are wanting to get into it, it's probably the last time that you'll have before it's going to be expensive.
Right.
A lot of the big players are still penny stocks. They got really beaten down. But especially this last quarter, a lot of these companies posted really good numbers.
Right.
And they are really taking off. There's a couple of cannabis ETFs if you don't want to invest in the individual
okay.
stocks.
Mm-hmm. Just to get exposure to that.
Yeah. So I would look into that. But yeah, especially, I mean, I was looking at it this week. A lot of them are posting like double-digit gains right now.
Okay.
So it's like the last time to get yeah. in. I mean, it's still, they're volatile, I guess.
Right.
So that's
but it's, yeah, and it seems like, you know, a bigger player who might want to acquire some of these probably, you know, it might be waiting for like at least a guarantee that,
you know, there's going to be some sort of federal descheduling or something that's going to allow them to kind of like, you know, have a more guaranteed recoup of their investment. But if they wait, then these companies might be too expensive.
Yeah.
So they might want to partner with them or something. So speaking of smoke, the last thing I wanted to talk about was carbon capturing smoke, which, so can you explain to me exactly what carbon capturing is? Because yeah, all I'm picturing is just a big vacuum sucking up a smokestack.
So
is that what it is?
Not exactly, but the way that carbon capture works, the way I understand it, you kind of have to go back to the 1980s when there was a ton of pollution, like more than we have now. A lot of the factories, you know, you would see them just for miles shooting
right
smoke into the air. And that's when we had a lot of acid rain in the early 1980s. And there needed to be a solution to that problem. So basically you would put a scrubber on the smokestack and it would scrub the pollutants and that were causing acid rain, and then that solved the problem. But the problem for the factory owners was that, you know, they kind of bitched and moaned about that because it was expensive to install the scrubbers. And then, but I think we can all agree that it's it was a good thing that we did that and kind of, you know, forced them to do that.
Right.
So now the big push is to reduce carbon emissions.
And those scrubbers aren't reducing carbon per se. It's just these like nasty like chemicals, I guess.
Right.
That are, yeah. That's, I remember learning about acid rain in school growing up, and you don't hear about it anymore. Is that why?
Yeah.
Just the acid rain went away.
We fixed it. Yeah, I mean, I think there is still some.
Did you ever learn about acid rain? You did? Okay, so it's still a thing.
Yeah.
Tyler's a younger guy. He knows about the acid rain. They scared the shit out of you in school about global
warming
and acid rain. Like, oh my God, don't go outside. The rain's going to freaking kill you. And, you know, all the ice caps are going to melt. I guess they're still doing that. So, okay, so that's not carbon capture is what we're,
right,
as we're talking about it now.
So if you think about, you know, paper plants, coal plants, steel plants, they're going to be emitting a lot of pollution still, a lot of carbon. And the way carbon capture works is where the pollution's coming from, you're going to install, and there's a handful of companies that do this. It's basically a bigger scrubber, if you think about it like that. It'll attach to the factory, and they're pretty big, like, so they are costly.
Yeah.
Very expensive. And within, so the carbon will get filtered in. They usually use a liquid that has an amine in it. So amines are anything that has nitrogen. So ammonia, NH3 will be an amine, and they're going to attach to the carbon, and then they're going to pressurize it, and it'll separate the carbon, turn it into a liquid, and it goes into another chamber, and then that liquid is funneled out and shipped across the country and then shot underground like 5 miles. So,
and then in a couple thousand years we'll dig it up and use it for something.
There's
no value to this like liquid that they're
there. So if you don't want to do that, there is value in the sense of, you know, reusing carbon,
yeah,
or using it in some way. Some companies want it,
right?
So that can be like a value add to,
right,
you know, in the industrial companies that are probably going to be forced to use carbon capture technology.
Right.
And I guess the problem is with,
if you compare it to the acid rain, it's like acid rain, you can clearly see it. And but with the increase in carbon, a lot of people are like, can I see that? It's like, is that really happening? And then it's, and it's also extremely expensive.
Well, yeah, I mean, even you don't really see even factories now, like, you know, it's something about like seeing this like dark black smoke like going up in the air, like that's not good. But even like, you know, some of the smokestacks around Baltimore are just like steam coming out. It's like kind of just this white and it just goes away. You're like, ah, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Even if it actually is.
It probably is.
But I mean, I think the bottom line is, you know, I mean, the last couple of years, there's been a huge like just mandate and federal investment into this stuff. So it's almost like you said, they kind of have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in some instances, it, based on these carbon credits, so to speak, you can actually make a decent amount of money off of doing this, right?
Yeah, and I guess the goal is what? Net? Does the U.S. have the goal of net zero by 2025?
Yeah, all these goals, I'm like, you're, you know, just come on.
Yeah, like you're out of your mind. Yeah. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, but, I mean, it does drive policy to a degree, and, you know, if you're moving the needle in terms of, you know, actually getting to offset either taxes or any, you know, your revenue stream that's coming in that can be from carbon, like companies are going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a play, right, that you're pretty excited about in the portfolio that's making some moves. And I think we'll probably link down in the description below.
Yeah.
To learn more, right?
I do have a report on that presentation. So if that's linked, that would be good. But there's a buyout happening as we speak. There's definitely been some moves happening.
Okay. Okay. So this is an urgent opportunity is what you're saying.
Yeah. You basically only have until the end of the second quarter, which is what, 3 months away?
Right. Okay.
So that's when this buyout's going to be completed, and that's probably where we're holding it till.
Right.
We're probably going to sell.
Okay.
So
interesting. All right. If you want to learn more, check out that link below. And if you're watching this after that, like years in the future, then we'll update it and then we'll tell you how it did. But you're already up a lot on that stock in the portfolio.
Well, it's up. It's definitely up this past week on the news.
Right.
So
gotcha.
I think we got in. I don't know if we're actually up on the underlying stock yet, but we're
okay.
It's that's the idea, and it's getting there.
Excellent. So. Excellent. All right. So if you're interested in learning about this carbon capturing stock that is urgent to invest in, follow the link below and learn more. And if you want to check out Alex's service, Insider Stakeout, and also you're writing for the Rich Report, right?
Yep.
Anything you want to tease with the Rich Report?
Well, we do have a pot stock in the Rich Report.
Okay.
And that's actually been doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
That whole portfolio is doing really well. I think dividend, it's all dividend plays except one or two. And there's only one or two stocks out of, I think there's 15 in the portfolio. And there's only one that is, you know, moderately, like a couple percentage points down. But we're up, you know, double digits on almost everything. So
okay, excellent. So Rich Report, Insider Stakeout, check it out below. Thanks a lot for coming on this show.
Yeah,
Alex. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and do all the, and comment too. Comment on, you know, our outfits.
On
I don't know.
Do you like weed?
Yeah.
Like, carbon capture?
Yeah, yeah, comment. Do you like both? Are you going to carbon capture your weed? Maybe you want to do that. I don't know. All right. See ya.